When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America. World's Smartest Podcast Network Roundtable episode we're doing today. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Michael Ira Kaplan. How you doing?
You can find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram, putting up new stand-up comedy clips all the time. You can find Kaplan at Cap'n America on all social media platforms. Kaplan on the show today. It's the World's Smartest Podcast Network. We got Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy, Professor Andrew Heaton, coming back on.
We've convened the brains.
What's that?
We're convening the brains this week.
Getting all the brains together to talk about colleges and the whole all the people taking their money out of the colleges because the college students are having the Palestine parties.
We're talking about when I went into college, there was a little bit of anti-Israel stuff, but now it's gotten a little crazy. There's a lot of we've had enough. There's a lot of protesting going on and they're taking their money out. And I want to talk to you guys about it. Find out what your thoughts
Listen, here's the deal is that literally everybody's talking about this topic in general. So we tried to find an angle on it. Mm. And I don't want to just be like, did you hear what happened yesterday? Did you hear what happened 2 weeks ago? Everyone heard. Exactly. Everyone knows the news. Not that the news is not important, but you can get it anywhere. You can turn on the TV. It's absolutely everywhere. So, but the interesting thing as it pertains specifically to America and these institutions is the struggle, the battle going on between the wealthy donors and the students. And did I frame that incorrectly? Is that not right?
Yeah, no, it's sort of like this. Colleges have been crazy for a long time, but like now they've reached a point where the wealthy donors are taking notice and being like, oh, wait a second. Maybe it's getting a little too crazy. Maybe we don't want to support this anymore. So we're going to get into that.
Kaplan. Patreon.com/Lost in America. That's how. Join our Patreon channel. People are doing it. It's the hip thing to do right now. And for $5 a month, you get this show for free, like everyone gets. Plus, you get us doing our Lost in the Bunker full throttle comedy podcast where Kaplan and I, we just It's jokes. It's nonstop. You can show up to work the next day, tell them to your friends, and they'll think they're your stories. But you get it for $5 a month.
And let me tell you, it's jokes. It's about our lives. And this week in my life, I'm going to be testifying in court. It's going to be in the newspapers and on the Robert De Niro case, his gender discrimination case he's embattled in.
You're going to be here first.
Yeah, you're going to be seeing stuff in the newspaper. Go to the New York Post, go to Hollywood Reporter. It's all over the place. But I'm not going to talk about any of that on Lost in America. But for our Patreons, $5 a month, you're going to get the entire story this week of what I go through, because I'm going to be ordering the Code Red on the stage. I'm going to be up there. I'm going to be giving out. I'm going to be in good form. I'm going to bring it.
So Kaplan bringing out a 1991 reference.
Well, I couldn't think of a legal drama that was more recent. What's a good one?
You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth is what I'm going to yell at. Exactly. So
Kaplan's going to be on the stand, everybody. He's going to be swearing on a Bible. He's going to say, ooh, I swear to tell really? the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. And they say, which God? And he goes, we got enough things to worry about in the world right now. Let's not get down to which God I'm swearing on.
To try to bridge the peace, I'm going to swear on a Quran. I'm going to say, give me the Quran.
There we go. Yes.
But yeah, I'm going to swear to all the gods.
You can request a Quran.
Quran. I don't know. Do they just know? I've never been to court before. That's going to be my first question. Do they just know, Kaplan, bring him the Jewish Bible? Or do they ask you ahead of time? Or we're going to find out.
No, I think everybody gets the King James, the Christian Bible. Doesn't all of America get the Christian Bible to
swear? Do they know? Didn't you just tell me on the Patreon show that King James was like a pedophile or something? Or what was the news?
That's according to somebody. I don't know who. That's the Bible. Whatever. Pick your Bible, but it's the Christian Bible. You're not swearing on the Book of Mormon. You're not swearing on the lost letters of Scientology.
But isn't it a meaningless swear if I swear in a Bible that my people don't really believe in all of it?
Meaningless to you, but wait, you know, this is a Christian country you're a part of.
All right, I'm going to swear to Jesus. Fine. That's going to happen too. I'm going to tell it all on the Patreon show. Yeah.
Tell it all on the Patreon show. The ins, the outs, the what have yous. All in there. Patreon.com/LostInAmerica, folks. And I think that's it. Should we get to the episode? I guess I should promote my dates. I'm going to be on the road. I'm in Northern California, everybody. Come see me at the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley, California, in the Bay Area, just across the Golden Gate Bridge on November 14th. I will be there. Come on out. Get your tickets, turnersparks.com. More dates coming soon. It looks like I'm going to be going to Mexico. Oh, wait. Also, November 29th, I will be in Rye, New York.
Oh, TurnerSparks.com. Fancy.
For those tickets, Jersey City on December 8th and 9th at the Laugh Tour Comedy Club.
Back to back,
all over the place. I'm also doing a ton of country clubs, but those are private shows. And our listeners don't belong
to country clubs. They're not.
Early next year, I'll be in Mexico, and a lot more dates coming very soon. So go all of that at turnersparks.com.
I understand. Cap, let's get to the episode.
Enough of us. Let's get to today's episode.
Play the brains. Welcome to the World's Smartest Podcast Roundtable Edition. I am your host for this afternoon. My name is Sir Michael Ira Kaplan, and I am joined by Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy.
Hello.
Mr. Andrew Heaton.
Good day.
And my old friend Turner Sparks from the Lost in America podcast.
Yes. How you doing? And Andrea's from the Majoring in Everything podcast. Heaton's from the Political Orphanage podcast. You can get all of them on phones, on any platform, all platforms, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. Go ahead, Kat.
I will mail you a file directly if you prefer. That's what I'll do.
Yeah. That's what we're doing. So, and today we have an interesting conversation. I hope everyone will enjoy talking about Israel-Palestine. Always fun. But more specifically, we're going to talk about what's going on campus in America. What got my attention, you know, as someone as a Jewish person who went to college, I'm well aware that colleges have always leaned left and been a little bit not crazy about Israel. But what got my attention this time around was just how two things. One, how, you know, far the protests have gone, how angry they've gotten, how crazy they've gotten. But two, and what I want to talk about today is how a lot of donors have responded to this. A lot of big donors, are pulling their money out of schools like Harvard and Penn, a lot of big, the Ivies, a lot of big schools, and they're resigning from boards that they sit on. They're saying they're not going to donate any more money. You know, Penn specifically, a big donor, is Mark Rowan, sorry, of the Apollo Group, is he's like their biggest donor they have, and he says, I'm not giving any more money until the president of the university resigns. So this is the type of thing, and a lot of people are not giving money to Harvard. So I want to start with Andrea, because she is our resident professor from NYU, or formerly of NYU.
I want to get your perspective.
They're a rogue professor. I believe the preferred title now is rogue professor or rogue. Freelance professor.
Professor of the people, all right? I'm a professor of people.
The people's professor.
It's like if you're a president, you always call yourself president. If you're a coach, they always call you a coach.
Maestro.
You're always a professor. Yeah, that's your title. Maestro, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like you know how the universities work. Like, will this make a difference? Because like, and I, to back up for a second, one of the things they're very upset about is that the universities, not that the students lean left and are protesting, but that the universities didn't issue statements, and many of them they didn't want to do any statements. And then they issued kind of like broad, both sides-y statements. They weren't very forceful, like the same way they were with George Floyd or with many other situations recently in recent history. So do you think this will make a difference? Will universities kind of back down, or maybe in the future they just won't even, they'll just stay out of everything now?
Right. Well, that's a good point. It's like, why do we expect these institutions to take stands anyway? And that's a separate conversation. But I want to say that, of course, and we're not going to focus on this, but of course the conflict is horrible. Everyone's dying. I hate it. I wish we weren't in this situation. However, I am darkly thrilled by these universities ripping themselves apart from the inside. I love it.
Yes.
I am watching it. I am eating popcorn. I picked up drinking again. I'm so excited. All right. So as all of your listeners know, so Heat and I was on your show complaining about academia. Turner and Cap, I went on your Off the Record show and complained even more with Off the Record examples about why I hate academia. And it ultimately boils down, as far as I can see, I'm very disgruntled. As far as I can see, universities are just money-making machines. I'm talking more about private universities. Public universities are complicated in their own way, and they're also kind of money-making machines. But private universities in particular, I was at NYU. You're talking about Penn. The Ivies have been in the news a lot. And the way that they make money is through donors and through tuition and alumni. So forever, they basically are just catering to the whims of Gen Z or the millennials or whoever the students are, because they want them to all feel loved and heard and respected. And then they want them to be alumni donors. And that's so important. But then they're also catering to donors. And as you said, with BLM, it was the case that because universities in the United States tend to be more left-leaning, it was pretty clear that everyone was like, we stand with Black Lives Matter, et cetera, et cetera. And only some people started the like free university in Texas or whatever. So it was just much more of a monolith of like what the right answer was. And as we're seeing on social media, as I'm seeing in my own as the token left-leaning person here, I'm seeing my friends go like splinter off into like kill Israel forever, and other people on the left like kind of standing with like the Biden message. Universities are an example of all of that. And so finally, the universities have to decide whether they are there to serve students or whether they are there to serve rich people. And I don't know the answer, because they eventually hope that the students will become the rich people.
Right? Yeah, it's tied together.
I'm desperate to see how this is going to unfold. And so, and we were just talking last night, I was walking through Greenwich Village and there was a huge protest that I think was NYU students. I don't really know. And I don't
even
know
for
sure. Yeah, you were there.
It was unaware. It went right by me.
It went right by you. But I like all these police were there and they're like, you got to get out of here. And so NYU students are out of their minds. I'll just talk about NYU. And I think this is happening at campuses everywhere. NYU students are demanding, of course, like they're pro-Palestine, free Palestine, freedom for Palestine is freedom for us all. Okay. But they're also demanding that NYU cut ties with Israel. And NYU has a long relationship. So there's donors, and there's also, we have a Tel Aviv campus. When I was at NYU Shanghai, it was hard to recruit faculty to move from the United States to live in Shanghai to like build up the university. So about half of our faculty were from, I think, University of Haifa. Lots of
Go
Israeli
Tigers.
Faculty. What's that? Terrorists? Is that
Go Tigers.
Go Tiger. I thought you said great terrorist. I was like, whoa,
No. He's coming out. I'm not swinging yet. I was just making a higher end joke.
All right. Very good. And so the university has deep, deep ties with Israel. It's a mess. And I am just dying to see how it all unfolds, because students are so far to the left and the universities have never stood for anything other than making the people who give them money happy. And so from a higher ed perspective, I'm like, I thought COVID was going to kill higher ed. This might kill higher ed. And I am here for it.
And I would just to put this in perspective, I just want the University of Pennsylvania has already lost $150 million in donations. That's a lot of money we're talking about.
I'm glad, Andrew, that you brought up the money making capacity of universities, because the rhetoric surrounding universities, I think, is very firmly entrenched in we're the little guys providing knowledge, and it is a $1 trillion a year industry in the United States. Mm-hmm. Higher ed accounts for $1 trillion. The economy of Canada is $1.9 trillion a year. So the higher education system of the United States is half a Canada worth of economy going on. The assets of the Ivy League institutions you're talking about are about the same as the assets of Apple and Amazon and a couple of other very large companies. So it's
but they act
a lot
like
of,
they're not these tech profit hungry, whatever. It's, as you said, there's a Malcolm Gladwell. I came across it in an article. I think he's since roped it into a book, and I've seen him give talks on it, where he talks about Princeton as the first ever perpetual motion machine, meaning they have so much money coming in from donations. What is the fuck is this? Pardon me.
Someone just did a thumbs up.
I didn't want that. Yeah. Perpetual motion. Princeton is in his mind, a perpetual motion machine, because they have so much money coming in from donors, and they have such a huge endowment. They have such a huge endowment that they can live off of the interest. And basically, according to him, they could never charge another student tuition for the rest of their existence and still continue to turn a profit, because they have so much money that they're just riding on this. And so it's unthinkably huge, the amount of money that these places are treading in. And I'm honestly glad to see that this is forcing us to have that conversation.
The part that
I don't
I'm finding,
think it's worth it. I wish there was no conflict. I just need to keep saying that. Yeah.
Right. We're all
really yes. Hamas is trying to run down higher education and expose the hypocrisy.
That's in their charter. People's charter is the river to the sea, and then number two, get rid of American higher education.
The
part of the Schadenfreude that I am enjoying of the higher ed side of this, again, everything Andrea said, I'm very much with them, but. I think Kaplan, you've been sending a lot of stories to us in our text thread, and one of them was a professor, I don't know where, Stanford, I think maybe, was giving students extra credit for going to pro-Palestine rallies and for and I looked at it because I was like, well, maybe this is a thing where, understandably, a professor would say, hey, you need to educate yourself on this. So if you go to a rally, you know, go to the rally. And then you could also get credit for contacting your congressman in favor of Palestine. So she was advocating for political participation and giving credit based on that. And what a lot of the donors are doing, from what I can tell, is going, hey, wait a minute, you're indoctrinating them with the wrong thing. We all agree higher ed is about indoctrination. We all agree higher ed does not exist to teach critical reasoning skills. It exists as a kind of theological institute which gives people the correct ephemeral and esoteric knowledge. But now you're doing the wrong knowledge. And so I'm kind of liking that bit where people are going, wait a minute, maybe having higher ed be designed around giving people the right ideas rather than teaching them how to think was kind of a bad step.
Right. And it's finally coming to the left, basically, because we've been in higher ed. There's a lot of criticism of the Koch brothers and how they fund a lot of universities. And there's also been issues where the Chinese government has funded various faculty members and universities around there because they're getting in there. And then we on the left get all up in arms and say, oh, we can't take donor conservative money, or like, why are we letting, you know, these people from China tell us? But you're right. It's only because we have our own message. And now that our message is not one that we agree with, we have to talk about it. It's like we finally are like, oh, we're in water too. Oh, shit.
As a distant cousin of the Cocteopus, as I think the most contact with the Cocteopus here, like the Cokes who fund like the Kennedy Center, They probably fund the Hoover Institution over at Stanford, which is a great think tank built into Stanford. And what it does is create a lot of really good economists that you don't have to agree with. But the point of the economics department is not to be monolithic. And on the flip side, like I'm reading Greg Lukianoff's books right now, the Canceling of the American Mind, and how insidious the obligatory DEI statements are, where they're like, you know, explain why you believe in social justice and this very specific kind of diversity. And you're like, well, I don't really agree with how you phrase it. And they're like, well, you can't work here. And it's like been a way to like just completely thin out anybody that is not completely on board with a monolithic, super blue progressive message. And so I'm fine with the Koch brothers funding a couple of like random miscellaneous non-progressives that hang out at the back of Stanford. That seems to me to be a win for everybody.
I would like to just jump in here for a second. I know what people must be thinking right now, which is that why don't the universities just stay out of all this, right?
Yes.
Why don't? And I'm here to tell you, Stanford tried that about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, didn't work, failed miserably. Stanford said, so basically there was nothing on Hamas went in and killed 1,400 Israeli citizens, not military people, innocent people. We all know that, right? And then nothing. Stanford University, no statement. And then within a few days, the donors started saying, hey, where's the statement? Where you've spoken out on Black Lives Matter, you've spoken out on climate change, you've spoken out, blah, 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 every single thing. So it took about a week, maybe 10 days, and finally the president of Stanford said, oh, I'm very happy to announce Stanford has a brand new policy that we don't comment on events of the world anymore. and then they said it with a big smile. Remember when they did the Imagine, Gal Gadot did Imagine We Are the World or whatever, and that was supposed to end COVID? And then at the end, she had that big smile, like mission accomplished at the end of the song.
Oh, I love it.
This was the Stanford, the dean of Stanford did that big smile like, huh, what are you going to say now? We don't comment anymore. And then everyone, I think, rightly pointed out, well, isn't this a convenient time to stop commenting? So the non-comment, I know it's like people say silence is your answer. I mean, silence is violence or whatever people say. But I don't think silence is violence if you're Shaquille O'Neal. You know, if you've never commented on anything ever, then sure, I'm not waiting on a comment from Shaquille O'Neal on what to think on Hamas and Israel. But if you're an institution or a person, if you're Tucker Carlson or you're Stanford University or you're Cuomo Jr. or whatever the guy, whatever network he's on now.
Chris Cuomo.
You do comment. People are expecting a comment because that's kind of, you always do that. So the second
that's
you
what
say
you do,
no comment. Yeah, there's, well, it's, you're not allowed to just get out now. And I am happy that people didn't just let that go away with Stanford. And I think Stanford does. I mean, I know being a West Coast person, a Northern California person where I grew up, that Stanford is getting as much flack out there as the Ivy Leagues are here in the Northeast. Nice. Last thing I want to say before I move on is I went University of Miami, my university. Yes. I'm very proud to say that they immediately, within hours of the Hamas attacks, had a full statement saying, we stand with Israel. We totally, it's like they just came out immediately. And I haven't heard a single thing of what stuff going on down there. I did look it up. There was a Free Palestine protest. And then there was a, I Stand With Israel protests, both of them. I'm also proud to say very small. My university, the students do not care about politics at all. They're very checked out. They go.
This is the type of school I want to go to. Some of my kids.
I think if I had been a professor at University of Miami, I would stay in academia from everything Turner has described over the years.
They don't care.
We have a giant swimming pool in the middle of campus. There's palm trees. Yes. Everyone just sits by the pool, enjoy drunk life on the weekends and goes to football games. And both of those were peaceful, but they were also like 12 students. So
Turner sent me that the day it happened. You sent me the We Stand With Israel email and I'm like old fashioned. It didn't even dawn on me the universities would be issuing statements. So I went to look in my inbox because my alma mater, Syracuse, is always hitting me up for money or sending me things about football games, basketball games. They sent nothing. I went onto their Twitter feed and they were tweeting about like Indigenous Peoples Day or something.
Right.
And wishing everyone that. And then people were mad that they didn't say anything about Columbus Day. Nobody else. And they never released a statement. Syracuse just has, they haven't even given in the Stanford thing. They've just gone, it is amazing because they love to issue statements when every, like you said, when 100% or 99% agree.
Right.
Very easy thing to do. Now they're
really five to 10% or whatever it might be. I guess it turns out more. I underestimate
college campus students. Is probably like 15 to 20%. Yeah,
15 to 20% disagree, and so then therefore all of a sudden we don't make statements anymore.
Well, Turner, when you sent the statement from University of Miami, I went looking for the NYU one because I can still access that email even though I try not to. And NYU did release a statement, and it was exactly the half-hearted. Pansy both sides kind of, and this was before Israel did any retaliation. There weren't nearly as many Palestinian deaths.
It was just, there was still a terrorist attack, a horrible, one of the worst terrorist attacks ever. And that was, we're talking at this point. Yeah.
Right. And the email was mostly, you know, our hearts are so heavy. We think of our, you know, fellow humans around the world. And then it was all mental health resources for students. It was like, call this hotline if you're struggling. Like, oh, well,
Can I represent the mealy mouth position for a minute? Because part of what confuses me on this is I first of all, I don't know a lot about this. I've assiduously avoided having to learn about Israel and Palestine ever since not because I don't care, because I just want one thing I don't have to have an opinion on. Like when everybody was freaking out about Netanyahu and the judges, I was like, nope, Zagging. I refuse to learn about this. I already have to learn about tariffs and all this other stuff. It's just, So I'm coming in as a two out of 10 in terms of knowledge on this topic. And so I understand the position of coming in going, this is very, very complicated. In terms of general policy prescriptions, nobody's perfect here. There are things that ought to be remade on both sides. So I can see that, or like, how does America factor into this? I think that there's a fairly wide spectrum of opinion that is intelligent and ethical, but I can do that and at the same time condemn a terrorist attack and say that there are legitimate grievances on behalf of the Palestinian people, and there is a plight to the Palestinian people, but killing people at a music festival and beheading old people, like that's a horrible thing. Like that bit I have no traction with whatsoever. But I can understand, having stated that, then going, you know, this is a complicated situation, and my instincts are not to immediately side with a nation state unless I know what's going on really fully.
Right. I wish more people were like you, Heaton, because usually we just say, Who am I following? That's the one. No, and then I just post a flag.
And people who don't know anything about this issue now become experts. Like, people became experts on COVID. They became experts. People just become experts now, and they post a video on TikTok or whatever.
And I think they're keying off of each other, right? So, like, what I'm noticing, and this isn't everybody. I think this is a deep and passionate issue for many people. But if you're a hardcore Republican and you go on Twitter and you see that the super blue college students are pro-Palestine, then you're like, well, then I guess I'm pro-Israel. Yes. Fuck you. And then if that guy does that, then the guy in college is like, well, the MAGA people are pro-Israel, so clearly Palestine's not racist. So like it ends up being this effective polarization, a term I learned from Andrea.
Yeah.
And I like that bit I don't want to do anything with, where I make my decisions based on who I hate. I don't want to do that.
Well, the other thing, and then we'll move on, Cap, but the last thing I want to say here is, it's also this topic in general, which we didn't want to get too far into specifically, but it's one of the most difficult ones, to Heaton's point, to figure out where you stand if you're not an educated person on it, if you haven't spent your life indoctrinated in one side or the other, or studying one side or the other, because it's moving very quickly.
Yes.
It went from Israel just got attacked to then Israel's fighting back to innocent people are dying to it's like COVID. The facts moved. The information moved over a number of years, you know, like three years later. Like, well, maybe the vaccines weren't as good as we first thought they were, but we had the thing. It's like that, but sped up into 2 weeks.
And way more emotional and personal, I think, for a lot of people. And it
depends on where you live. You know, if you know, there's a lot of people in America and around the world who've never met a Jewish person in their life. The Jews are only how many in the world, Cap?
There's like about 15 million of us. We are not
15 million on the entire world.
Yeah, and like half of them are in Israel.
Cap, go.
There's people who either are Jewish or who are friends with Jewish people who are it's personal to them. And then there's 95% of the world where it's not. It's a video game they're watching on TV, you know?
Right.
Anyway, Cap, let's move on. In Oklahoma, where I'm from, where a lot of people don't know any Jews, Jews are like mythical biblical creatures. Without actually knowing anything about modern Jews, like I know people that have elaborate eschatological foreign policy positions where they're like, well, we have to support Israel as a state because when the Antichrist comes, he has to sit on the throne of Moses for Jesus to return.
Exactly. Honestly, like, that take makes a lot more sense than a lot of the stuff I've seen on Instagram recently.
And I should also say a lot of people know Palestinians either.
Yeah, that's true. No, a lot of people don't know. Yeah, exactly. They don't know anybody in the region. They don't know. Yeah. So, and people, they don't know, like people like me have been involved. You say, like, we know about this issue for years, but other people are just, they're learning it so fast and they're believing everything they read. And I consider myself
vaguely knowledgeable of events. Heaton, I'm like you in that I've largely opted out of being embroiled in this particular issue, and that's a state of privilege, blah, blah, blah. But when the Hamas attack happened, I actually went to Israel's Wikipedia page because I was like, how did we have Israel? Where did it come from? Who has a claim? I don't know.
I did that too.
I had no idea.
Wikipedia.
This is how little I know about this. None of us know what we're talking about except maybe Kaplan and people with personal ties.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
All right. So I want to move us on here, guys. I think the question after this would be, so all this money is getting taken out of universities, right? The wealthy people are pro-Israel. And so they're saying, I'm not going to be funding these institutions anymore. A lot of people are saying, I'm not going to be funding an institution that disagrees with my views. The next question would be, is that fair? Is that a fair way to approach this?
Turner, do you mean in the perspective of should donors have a say over that kind of a say over the places they're donating? Or are you donating and saying, just like, I'm not going to donate to the Red Cross and then tell them how to run their business? Is that the idea?
I guess the second one. Yeah. Do we think that this is, and not only fair, I guess fair is not the answer. Is this the solution, I guess, is the best way to go with. So in the future, does this set a precedent that whatever you will fund something so long as it agrees with every single thing you agree with?
Right. That's what
Is this a brighter future or not?
We want to have a free speech society on campus. And it's sort of So yeah, that's the thing. Like, how much say should the people who are donating money have?
I think, Andrea, you go first, since you're the one with deep knowledge of this stuff. Or
well, it's exactly the kind of double, two-faced, hypocritical everything that we've been talking about. Is no shock my angle on this or my take on this, which is that in principle and in words, donors have no say over what universities do, what universities teach, or anything like that. I do not work in the alumni relations or donor or development. There's all kinds of like words, euphemistic words for get money from rich people to fund the university. I'm not involved in those, but I've had a few conversations with those offices where they will say, hey, we have a person who's contacted us and they want to make a gift for a scholarship, or they want to make a donation in some form. Like, would you speak with them because they want something to do with data science? So I've like been in the system where the people who court these donors then ask me to talk to them or say like what sorts of places could we put this money or whatever else. And basically it's just like if you were like trying to sell, they're trying to sell something to these rich people. And in the process of doing it, the more money these people give you, the more you're going to sell them the thing that they want. And so you're going to start to say, oh, you prefer cars with like this sort of feature? I'm going to put that in. And so you just keep, it's not written in, but it just happens naturally that you're like, I want to keep getting this person to give me money. And so I'm going to say, hey, what sort of things? Literally, they were like, let me give you a concrete example. They said, okay, someone wants to donate money to the Center for Data Science to establish an alumni network. We didn't have an alumni network because we were a new department. And they said, okay, could you establish an alumni network if this person donated money? And so we had a big conversation like, well, it's something we were going to do anyway, but we're going to, I guess, prioritize it more because we want this money. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for all of this. But basically, we ended up developing a program because a donor wanted it. And so I've never had a case where a donor is like, let me see your syllabus. What are you putting on there? But there is a lot of power in a subtle way over where the university generally directs its energy. You can also say, I want you to have a faculty center that focuses on this kind of research, and I'll give you money for that sort of thing. And so you'll get money. I think an example was at BU where Ibram Kendi, I don't know how to say his name, the anti-racist person.
Ibram, yeah.
They started a whole center after BLM for him and for his research. And I'm sure that came, A, he brought in a lot of money because he's a public figure. And B, I'm sure a ton of people on the left who wanted to support anti-racism threw money at that. And so you can choose where you put your money and you can influence what the university prioritizes. And so they absolutely have had a say. I think, Turner, you're right to bring up the question of like, should they have a say? And I think the answer ought to be no, but in reality, it isn't.
And they sit on boards, and because some of these people are stepping off of boards. Do they have influence on how things are taught when they're on a board, or what do you do on a board other than go to
I don't know what university boards do. I'm on a board of a nonprofit, and we do have some say, and I don't know why, because I shouldn't have a say in how this company is run, but basically we kind of have to approve or not approve various decisions. And so I think the board can kind of play like a veto power role where we say, I don't think the university should put X amount of money in this area. I think they should be prioritizing this, or I think you should be recruiting students from these backgrounds and not those backgrounds, whatever.
Because I will say the last thing before, I know he's got something to say here, but that I read that at Penn, that was part of the reason they're pulling money, because the people who were upset about the like Hamas Literary Festival they did a few weeks ago, and about the way the Penn didn't respond at all to this, basically they were told, well, maybe you shouldn't be on the board. Like they basically, anyone who was like sort of pro-Israel or like piping in a little bit, they were like, maybe this isn't the place for you to be on the board. So then they were like, if you don't want us on the board, you're not getting our money either. Like, we're out. So anyway.
Right.
Can I make I have a solution here.
Yeah.
Let's go.
What if these board, and now I'm thinking as somebody from inside the university, okay, we've lost the American, we've lost the Jewish money, right? We've lost the American money, the American right money.
Yeah.
What if we just go to, what if we go to Hamas and we say, hey, do you want to fund Stanford?
Yeah, go to Iran.
You know, they got money.
Because Hamas money comes from Iran, so we got to go to Iran then.
Okay.
Go right to.
Yeah.
You start to see a lot of like Iranian institutes.
It's double down is what I'm saying here. You lean in, as Hillary Clinton once said. And now it's Stanford University brought to you by Hamas, right? It's something like that. We put their name right under the banner, right? Right under
I'm
the
title. I'm majoring
in like,
freedom fighting or whatever. Well, I don't know if that's
from the river
name.
To the sea kayak team or whatever.
Like, yeah.
We go literally lean in. I like Heaton, this.
Go ahead. Yeah. First of all, I apologize, Turner. I missed your initial kickoff question. I've got thoughts on what we've previously said, but can you restate the kickoff question for me?
You're really quiet. Is that true for anyone else?
Yeah, he's very quiet. Heaton's volume went down a lot. I'll jump in here while Heaton's sorting that out. The question, Heaton, is it fair and is it a good future if these donors are now pulling their money or not pulling their money based off of individual rallies and or statements made by the university, topic by topic, you know, statement by statement? Is this a good way to go forward? And I find go ahead, Heaton. You seem to have your thoughts together.
I think it's a good thing. I alluded to this at the beginning of our conversation. I do not like the purpose of education to teach people the right thing to believe and think. I feel that way in public school and high school. I feel that way particularly in higher ed academia. The purpose of education is to provide knowledge and critical reasoning skills where you think for yourself. It's not to have a giant machine where we put the unwashed masses in so that they can believe the things that upright people like you and I think. And when we treat education like a really big mechanism to crank thoughts out on a conveyor belt, it ends up becoming really important who controls it and who funds it. We're starting to see these fights like in Florida and places like that where the state legislature's coming in and saying, well, we're going to defund all the public universities if they teach these particular topics, or they have to teach these particular topics. And previously, the universities had their own insular monolithic mechanisms for charting knowledge to go in its particular direction. So I am very suspicious of this mechanism anyway and an outright foe of it. So I think it's a good thing for these fissures to be happening. I'm going to make a walk for a second here. If I could push a red button and make the Catholic Church disappear, I wouldn't do it. There's a lot of things I like about the Catholic Church, but I wouldn't go back to when the Catholic Church could take your money and kill you. I think that was actually a really good step for the Catholic Church, was where the Catholic Church has to go to you and go, we'd really like some of your money. And you go, you guys are doing a good job, or nah, not going to give you my money. I think that was a very, very good purifying step for the Catholic Church in terms of corruption, in terms of morality. And so when you have a monopoly of power in a particular field, it doesn't tend to benefit the inherent intentions of it. And I think one of the other big problems that's going on in higher education right now is that it does have a monopoly on what constitutes legitimate knowledge. Mm-hmm. In that in our system in the United States, if you don't go to college, well, you're just kind of a loser, aren't you? You get to be at the bottom of the pyramid because you kind of fucked up. You're an idiot. Yeah. You didn't go to college. Only smart people go to college. And that's stupid. That's wrong. There's lots of, like, when Carnegie was funding libraries throughout the United States, that was a repository of knowledge where people could go and educate themselves. And today we have libraries and we have Kindles and we have YouTube and we have great courses. And I think we ought to think of—
And we have the world's smartest podcast network.
The world's smartest podcast. Yes. There's all these different mechanisms to get knowledge from. And universities are a good mechanism to get knowledge from, but they're not the exclusive mechanism to get knowledge from. And I think it would be beneficial for everybody to think of it like the great courses CDs you can buy, where if somebody goes, I've listened to all the great courses in X, you'd be like, that guy's pretty smart. But you wouldn't look at everybody else in the room and go, well, they're fucking idiots because they didn't listen to this particular great courses thing. So these fissures that we're starting to see of, you know, what is the actual purpose of university? You know, to what extent are we going to fund this? All of these are very good questions. And I think it would be very helpful to the university system to have a really deep introspective moment on what its purpose is. And I think right now its purpose is to crank out certificates because they're worth a lot of money. And it ought to get back into the business of teaching people how to think.
I will also add to that.
I just want to clear up Heaton's point. So do you think it's good that the donors are pulling their money, or it's bad?
Yeah, I think it's good. Why are they pulling their money? Because we want universities to teach and adopt particular positions because it's a medieval institution that's indoctrinating people. And I think seeing this connection between money and indoctrination is a very healthy thing. And being able to pull back from that and go, well, maybe we just shouldn't make this about trying to sculpt thought or specific thought outcomes, rather the mechanisms of how to do it. That would be positive. So I view this as a good thing. I think that any moment where the universities have to think about what they're doing is good.
Couldn't you argue the opposite angle, though, that they're pulling their money specifically because these students don't agree with them?
Can you rephrase that? I didn't follow.
Yeah. So my question is, couldn't you argue the opposite angle? So that if they're saying my money is going towards, say, Princeton University, And I am a Jewish person in America, and I support Israel. And now that I'm seeing these students don't support what I support, I'm pulling my money. But I would keep my money in if the students did support what I support. Heaton.
Well, but see, if it's about the students.
No, Kaplan, stop. Kaplan, I was asking Heaton. This is a question for you.
Okay.
I'm saying.
I'm trying to frame for him.
Do you know what I'm saying? So
I see what you're saying, but I guess I see like an agency difference between these two things. Let's say I become very wealthy and I dress like I am.
Yeah.
But let's say I catch up with my wardrobe at some point and I become wealthy. And I want to become a patron of the University of Oklahoma, my alma mater. My priorities would be very different as a donor than they would be as a student. As a student, I am personally there, and it is an experience that I'm having in a community that I'm joining and that I'm living in. And as a donor, I would be much more concerned with the intellectual rigor of the university. I would want students to be uncomfortable. I don't think students should be comfortable. I think they should be constantly challenged and have ideas that they're encountering that make them uncomfortable. If I were a student, I don't know that I'd care as much about that. Now that I'm out of it, I'm like, no, I want to throw you guys all into the pot and like make you think really hard and make you sweat. I think that's good, right? So I don't know that the consumer, student is going to have the same outlook as the investor, the funder.
And that
And I personally think that if you have money, you should be able to do whatever you want with it. I don't think anyone should be beholden. And also, this is just the real world. Like, if you don't think that, grow up. You know, people are allowed to do whatever they want with their money. But this is leaning towards campaign donations. And as Andrea said, I'm sure very fairly, it's always been that way. We're just kind of waking up to it. The average, the casual observer is kind of waking up to it. But this is, I'll continue giving money to you as long as what you're doing reflects what you're teaching, what your students are, reflects my point of view. Go ahead.
Well, and I think the intersection, Turner and Heaton, of what you're saying is that for a long time, like, rich people have always done whatever they wanted with their money. And I'm going to give money to this foundation to support jazz musicians, and I'm going to give money to support literacy, and I'm going to give money to support the climate or whatever I want. And they've been giving money to universities with the expectation, it seems, and we're seeing this now, with the expectation that the universities would then carry their social justice or priority message. Like, whether I'm a Koch brother or whether I'm on the left, I am giving money to this university because they're teaching people to think the way I want them to think. And I think the reckoning here that Heaton, maybe, tell me if I've got this right, is excited about is now we're saying, oh, actually, if you're going to give money to a university, you should be giving money to the idea of teaching someone how to think, not teaching them what to think. If you want to donate money to tell people what to think, donate to an advocacy group for whatever it is that you care about. Don't donate to university. We're not there yet, but that's kind of like where it could go if this shakes out the way I think we're all hoping it will.
That would, well put. I would settle for actually having different viewpoints within academia. I would settle for that. If you had like, and you see intellectual diversity within economics departments, you see very little intellectual diversity within anthropology, sociology. I would love critical reasoning to be first and foremost rather than indoctrination, but merely just having different ideas you're being confronted with, I'd be happy with.
Well, and this brings me to where I want to go next is that you mentioned Heaton, the idea of being uncomfortable, and that's what we want in universities. You want to be able to, I used to love to be like, I was a loser. I like to argue, like to like hear different perspectives. I would go to speeches of people I didn't agree with just to hear their perspective.
Good for
you. But we know people, they don't do that anymore. And being pro-Israel has always been, lately has been very uncomfortable for students on campus. You just don't talk about it kind of thing. And that's what I wanted to get to is that like, it's not just about money and it's not just Jewish money. There was this letter that Mitt Romney and several other Harvard alumni who were not Jewish wrote to the campus, basically saying it's not just about what they're learning. It's about the safety. And this is a bit Schadenfreude. What someone said Schadenfreude earlier about the universities, and they've created this world, the safe space world, and trigger warnings for everything. And so maybe they deserve this, but the universities, but the students don't. And because what's happening at schools like Harvard, kids are locking themselves. Jewish students have been locking themselves in dorm rooms or in student unions during these protests when they're knocking on their doors, harassing them. When they've asked for help, they've been sent like a website for mental health resources. You know, there's been events where they've said Jewish students are told to avoid the area. That's been their help, basically. So I guess my, you know, so they're basically, these alumni are saying this is unacceptable. Harvard's got to come out stronger. Harvard's got to, you know, have their back of the Jewish students the same way they would any other racial group or discriminated against. So we're maybe going forward, like where should colleges' roles be? Because obviously we want to have an idea where people can pro-Palestine, pro-Israel, pro-whatever, get out in public and have a rally. But where is the line, I guess, on a campus about like,
Thank you for asking. I'm glad that we can clarify this. I would like to facilitate cognitive dissonance and contrary viewpoints within the student body. That's where I want the discomfort to arise from, by people being forced to question their priors and investigate why they believe things and be open to changes of opinion. That's what I want to facilitate. So the idea, like, just turning the literal heat up to 90 degrees to make students sweat is not my goal.
Right. You know,
it's my goal, but that's why.
Depriving them
I
of like fiber. And so in a situation like that, I think it kind of reflects the free speech stuff that's been going on campuses. I don't know why I'm picking on Stanford today, but recently Stanford Law invited an appellate judge out, which is a big deal. And then proceeded to just shout the guy down. The dean showed up, sat there, allowed chaos and bedlam to occur, and then came up and gave a speech basically saying, why did we even invite this guy? Is the juice worth the squeeze? And kind of made a case against free speech. So the way to handle that kind of stuff, which is not that hard, is you don't have to go to these things if you don't want to, but you have to allow other people to go to them. If there's a speaker that wants to come here, some asshole like Milo, what's his name, is going to come to the camp. I would go listen to him. I don't like the guy, but I'd be curious as his point of view, and I shouldn't be deprived of that. And when you shut down free speech, you're shutting down the ability for me to say something, and you're harming somebody else's ability to hear it, right? I would put it very similarly. So at our favorite university, the University of Miami, as Turner has rightly pointed out, there were pro-Israel and pro-Palestine assemblies. I think that's very healthy. And those are, you know, like on my end, I have many Jewish friends. I only know one or two Palestinian people. So my epistemological model is very stilted. Most of the knowledge I have comes from people that are very, very, very pro-Israel, right? Same. I would like to know more people that are pro-Palestine, because I'm sure that there are things that are going on in Palestine. Yeah. Well, the main thing is everybody should have the right to assemble and air opinions and debate where they're physically safe and they're not being accosted. So yeah, if Jews are getting run into rooms and they're barricading the door, that is not the kind of uncomfort that I'm looking for.
Well, and I think that's what colleges
campus
need to encourage, figure out a way. I don't know how they're going to do this. Maybe it probably starts younger, because I mean, frankly, I'll share something personal, but we had a vigil for Israel in my neighborhood last week, and my daughter said a girl who wasn't at the vigil, who's a student within her class, she's 9 years old, came up to her and was like, oh, we can't be friends anymore, and just walked away. So the indoctrination starts early on this, on some issues like Israel.
Wait, she her family basically has cut off ties because your daughter
they're not good friends, but yeah, she basically told her, oh, I'll never be allowed to be friends with you now, or something like that.
Because the daughter somehow has an opinion on Palestine?
Yeah, I don't want to pick on a 9-year-old, but that's just...
Yeah, I do.
At any level, that's I would go to a Palestinian vigil. You're memorializing the dead, right? That's always appropriate.
It's never inappropriate
to memorialize the dead.
We have a society now where you can't... Some people on some issues just can't hear the other side even. This is not the only issue. Climate, there's a few others. If you have someone on campus who's going to, you know, give a pro-Israel perspective at a speech or something, they're going to get shouted down.
I just want to say, I don't know if climate's an issue. Isn't it? The world is getting hotter. Not to totally change the topic, but.
No, I meant it is. The world's getting hotter, but I meant there's what's the word? Maximalism approach.
I know what you mean.
You can't have a compromise or something. Get back to the topic with, there was something from Mitt Romney's letter that caught my eye that I wanted your opinion on. Right. You can start with this, Turner, as the University of Miami alum, because I don't know if they would be interested in this down there. But they are proposing, they say, in order to become a model for campus free speech, the university should immediately develop and require that all students participate in a semester-long course that teaches productive discourse, critical thinking, and the interrogation of facts, so students learn to debate through reasoned inquiry. Do we think this is a good idea, and do we think there's any way in hell this wouldn't be a total shit show?
I mean, I think it's a good idea, but I don't know a specific course is needed. I thought that's just what a given. That's just a given. What college is that your critical thinking?
But they go into the wrong groups,
is,
I think, right?
Yeah. I think it's this idea that, you know, we need. You say we need critical thinking, but then who decides what critical thinking is? basically. So who decides right now is professors, which I think has always been the case. And it's kind of always been the case that professors are left-leaning just inherently based off who becomes a professor. Andrea knows more about that than I do. But usually it's kind of how that works out. And I just want to get back to this idea of the free speech thing. So free speech is obviously great. We do want free speech. I think what's happening right now, when you see Jewish students locking themselves in cafeterias, so and then people beating on the doors. I think this happened at a college yesterday or a couple of days ago in New York City. The pro-Palestinian rally people have sticks and they're knocking on the doors to try to get into the Jewish students so they can get to them. I think what's happening, if you guys remember, there was that Stanford experiment in the 70s or whatever, where... And then I had a teacher who a couple of years before me in elementary school tried this in our class, which based off the Stanford experiment, the teacher came in to a bunch of fifth graders and said, all right, guys, there's just been a new study. Everybody with blue eyes is smarter than everyone with brown eyes. So what we're going to do, I got to leave. I have a meeting, but the blue eyed kids, you're in charge. And I'll be back in a couple hours. He literally did this. He was like the best teacher of all time. Mr. McClurk, shout out. And he said, I'll be back in a couple hours. And he just left for a couple hours. And I don't know if he put cameras in the room or what happened, but he somehow knew what was going on. And what happened was
he just went to Hooters. This was all an excuse to leave the campus for a couple hours, have a beer,
it was
come back, claim he's brilliant, Mr. Holland's office.
Immediately, the brown-eyed kids were the dummies, and they were the blue-eyed kids were in charge, and it was chaos. Immediately turned into chaos. And I think what's happening on campuses now is professors are telling these pro-Palestine students that you're right and the Jewish kids are wrong. And so it's free speech mixed with empowerment. You're empowering one side that you're smarter and you're more correct than the other side.
More moral.
And, and a giant caveat is all of my information right now is coming off of social media. So this could be a very small thing that's only happening at a couple campuses that's being blown up. I haven't seen actual studies on all this, but that's where I think it that's kind of what I think. And then my question, though, would be because there's also something you keep reading where people are the chant is from the river to the sea, from the river to the sea, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And that sounds very innocuous. And then I Googled what that meant. And it basically means, as far as I could tell, that we want to wipe out the state of Israel. We want all Israeli people to be gone. And Israeli is not only Jewish. There are Arab Israelis, as Cap informed me along the way at some point. But it seems like most of the people in Israel are Jewish. Not all.
Well, so it's 2 million Arabs, way. But yeah, they could stay. Sure.
Sorry. There's Arab Israelis. But does that mean they can stay? I read that what it means is just Israel's gone as a place.
Yeah, and all they can stay. They mean the Jews would leave. The Jews would leave. Yes. to clarify.
Why don't they just go back to Harmony?
Is that what they would say?
Sorry, you cut out. What was that?
Is that what they would say, Kaplan? The people on college campuses right now are saying from the
river. Here's what I would say, judging, I think, to get into their minds. A lot of them don't think of themselves as anti-Semites, and they don't think that's what they mean. They're just chanting it because it's catchy, because it's what they hear their friends say. They don't know a lot about the issue, and they just think like the Jews can leave and go to Europe or something, or come here to America. Like it's like we just like all these countries are going to welcome him in or something. They don't think of it like they'd be killed. I think a lot of them now. The Hamas charter means they would be killed, but that's
And so is that taken from the Hamas charter? That from the river?
It's from the Hamas charter. It's from the charter. Yeah, it's like their founding document, like our constitution. Yeah.
Okay, so if you're chanting something, and this is a question for everybody, if you're chanting something on campus from a terrorist organization's charter, is that free speech or is that now a hate speech? I genuinely don't know the answer, so I'll pose that to everybody.
If this was
an ISIS, if this was taken from ISIS's charter and you were chanting that walking around, how would it
kind of? And I guess the lesson here is that ISIS really needed more of a PR push. Right, because we could have some people chanting ISIS quotes, but here we are. Didn't work.
I think free speech and hate speech occupy two different spheres. So free speech, we can be talking about the culture of free speech, and we can be talking about legal free speech law. Hate speech, we're really just talking about the culture of hate speech. Like, there's not a lot of law about hate speech because most speech is protected. So, like, You can say that some free speech is hateful, what might be the way to put it, but it would still be free speech and still be protected. Like the leader of Iran, Ahmadinejad, came and spoke at NYU about 15 years ago now. And like, I thought that was good. I would have wanted to hear what he had to say. I didn't believe him. Like, he literally at one point said there were no gays in Iran. But like, you know, like he's going to go up and spout that dumb shit. I still want to hear his perspective on it. I'd like to know from the horse's mouth.
Right. I think, I mean, there is in universities, if we're looking specifically there, the universities, I think, have something written in their code of whatever rules that students should be in a safe environment. And if we are in a world where Jewish students are fearing for their physical safety and they're locking themselves in libraries and dorm rooms, then I think that whatever the university has like promised legally to take care for these people, they're not doing it. On the other hand, I think until this moment, and I think this is what a lot of people outside of universities have criticized universities for, this is the indoctrination, the push of I don't feel physically safe has gotten maybe overused. And so now—
Right, that's what I was saying earlier, the shot in front of this. Yeah, exactly.
The shot in front of this. And, you know, 2-3 years ago, a student might say, oh, I don't feel safe. I feel triggered because in my classroom, you used an example of sexual assault to illustrate a particular point about something else. And you shouldn't have mentioned that because I experienced it and now it's harmed me in some way. And so I think, again, I don't see it, Heaton, as two separate spheres. I do see them as two separate things, but I think that line is very blurry. And for some reason, I think, you know, chanting from the river to the sea feels towards hate speech to me because it seems to invoke extermination, genocide, Nazi, all that stuff. But I could see it happening. I could see it being okay. But I think the minute you're physically in danger and don't feel safe walking through campus, I think that we've crossed a line. But I don't know how to police that line at all.
Yeah. And I'll just say that I've seen videos like this. I'm sure you've seen them as well, of these people going around and people put up the posters of the Israeli hostages. And then these people tear them down. And like NYU, the NYU law student who's lost her big law firm job because she wrote a pro Hamas statement. She's one of the people tearing them down. And people, I don't know if it makes, like, I've heard someone say, like, I don't feel safe here in response to that. And I don't, as a Jewish person, I don't know how that would make you unsafe. It's just the person's an asshole and I'm fine with doxing them over it. But, you know, so I do think it is tough because colleges have enabled this for so long. This kind of like, you could say, like your example about sexual assault is a great one. Like, you can just say anything can trigger you.
Right.
Real or legitimate. So I don't know how you walk this back at this point.
There was this wasn't my line, but I read it online where they said speech is literal. Like the idea of some of the college campuses now is speech is literal violence has been the statement for a very long time.
Yes.
But when the Hamas went into Israel and committed literal violence, now that's just expressing an opinion, you know?
Oh, yeah, exactly. God. And then the believe all women thing is like ended when the Israeli women said they were raped by Hamas. They're like, well, I need proof. Where's your proof? You know,
evidence.
Well, yeah, you were raped, but you weren't beheaded. I mean, that's a lie.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, they're that too. Fine. Exactly. You're fine. So it's a crazy.
With these protests that are going on, as an outsider here, I do take all of them with a very big grain of salt. So I went to a protest when I was at the University of Oklahoma. I might have mentioned it on the show before. Apologies if I have. It was protesting the genocide in Darfur, which I am against. Mm-hmm. This is back when I'm, I think, a Democrat in college, and I'm marching with everybody in this Darfur thing, and I'm genuinely trying to figure out what we're doing. Yes. So I'm talking to people going, who are we trying to influence? Are we is the goal here to get the American government to intervene? Are we trying to are we hoping their government will see the University of Oklahoma? And no one really had an idea of what the point was. And it finally struck me of like, oh, everybody just kind of wanted to get up and march about something and feel self-righteous. That was my take on it, was that if that whole thing went away, we would have found another thing to get self-righteous about. So I am very suspicious of passion in people. I don't trust feelings, and I really don't trust it in college students, because I think it's very heady to march with your fist in the air and walk up that hill. And like, I don't know. I just, anybody doing that and chanting stuff and was like, yes, 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 we're all going to get laid in the parking lot later. Good for you.
Heaton, I'll take it a step further and say that I don't understand the point of protests full stop. And I've read research about the point of protests. And I think when they're like really, really big and they're like towards government officials, like maybe something happens. you know, January 6th was a protest until it wasn't, and then we're still talking about it, so that was something.
Well, like Martin Luther King seemed to be efficacious with his.
But but generally, I feel the same way. I walk around and people are shouting all this stuff, and you're like, who? I maybe I'm just lazy, but I just don't see...
I think it's liturgical. I think that it is a religious event people are doing for all the same reasons you go to church. You get to sing songs and be a part of a group and have a moral lesson impugned to you and feel as though it's church service. And that's fine. But that's why I don't give people credit for it. Because I'm like, well, okay, all my religious friends like going to church too, but I'm not.
Right.
Congratulations on being Baptist. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool club on a college campus, on a liberal college campus. Like, the Palestine Club, there was that video I might have sent you guys where like someone went in to actually debate the girl working the booth and she just didn't even know anything. Like, you know, it's just like, I'm just doing this because my friends do it. You know, kind of thing.
And on a high school campus, I remember we protested something at high school. I can't even remember what it was, but it's literally, you always do a walkout. It's a way to get out of class.
Yeah.
Who has walked out of class before?
Of course
I haven't. No.
It was in
junior high.
It could have been Darfur. What do I know? I don't even remember. I don't even, I barely know what Darfur is, but I remember, I'm sure I walked out of class for it.
In my junior high, the Gulf War, I was just going to say, they had the Gulf War came up, and we were all going to walk out to protest because we wanted to be like Vietnam boomers or something.
Yes, and then Gulf War.
Yeah, they made an announcement on the speaker because they're like, anybody who walks out of school will be suspended and it will go on your permanent record. And not one person walked out. Our generation, we were actually scared of consequences.
We don't want to do it if it has consequences. We just want the upshot, not the price.
Yeah. Right.
Kaplan, I've got a question for you. Being the resident Jewish member of our panel and somebody that has family in Israel and all these things, I'm curious for your interpretation of Israel in the media and Israel in politics in the United States. I ask this when I was a student and in college campuses. When I was at the University of Oklahoma, I hung out at Hillel all the time. AIPAC invited me to go on a trip to Israel. Wow. I turned them down because I felt that I would be beholden to a particular viewpoint and that would be unethical of me. But I was still hanging out at Hillel all the time.
Exhausted.
And from my perspective, I view the American government as very, very pro-Israel for a very, very long time because both parties have factions in them that are very pro-Israel and we fund it. But that's where I'm at. I'm curious as to what you think in terms of media, politics, academia, if I'm missing the mark or if you've had a very different lived experience to me.
I mean, this could be a whole nother podcast, but I'll be brief. We'll do this another time. But yeah, no, the government of America has always been, Jews have been grateful that America as a government has always been the most supportive of Israel. The media, not so much. It's been a long, there's nothing like a Jewish family get together. If you have some people, I don't know, the Gentiles talk about the weather, whatever, the football team. Jews always get together on a barbecue and we talk about CNN's coverage of something with Israel. It's like the ridiculous CNN coverage bias. My whole life I've heard about the New York Times and CNN and BBC, the usual suspects that they have always been very anti-Israel. So when the hospital story broke,
I thought they were all
pro-Israel.
Got
that wrong.
I did too. No, this is shocking to me.
Yeah, no, it's always that's what we had Lost in America podcast last week with our guest Daniel Pomerantz works for an organization that's like always looking to correct the media essentially because the media
seems very pro-Israel right now, right?
My impression has been other than the hospital debacle where they got that wrong that Israel bombed the hospital they didn't bomb. Other than that, I do think they've done a good job. And I think my theory is, not that I'm a professional on how TV works, but I think that the Hamas did a huge PR miscalculation here. And the raping and the murdering of all these people at a music festival and killing old families and old people, we don't have to repeat everything, but it was so heinous that like regular people who don't know a lot about this issue around the country are siding with Israel and CNN and that they realize they needed like soccer moms to be watching TV at nightly news. We're not going to take Hamas,
I think they've done a good job. Is just kill people. Don't mess around with the raping and the beheading and the burning. Like if you're going to,
usually my opinion is what they do is they have a terrorist attack. It's horrible, but it's not, and then Israel responds and the response is what gets all the news. That's how we view it. And then people, Israel has more better weapons. They don't, Hamas, we don't need to go through it, but they don't have a defense system. They use human shields, all these reasons. They're going to have more civilian deaths usually. So we usually bear the bad PR for that, but.
Right. Right. Which is
happening. Can I ask a final question to Kaplan? Yeah.
Sure.
Because you just used the word, and I've been hearing it so much recently, and I, It's usually in a negative sense. So what does Zionist mean when you say I'm a Zionist? Because I was one of those college campus things. They're like, get the Zionists off our campus. You know, what does Zionist mean?
Well, so Zionism is a very not originally it just meant you believed in a Jewish state. It was formed before Israel was even in a concept. Theodor Herzl back in, like, I think 1895. It was just the idea. Zionism was like the World Zionist Congress. It was just to have a Jewish state, then it became Israel. Then it became coded over time as Israel became controversial to being pro-Israel, you say you're a Zionist. But I also just like to use it a little bit tongue-in-cheek because people who say things that are anti-Semitic will sometimes say, oh, I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm just anti-Zionist. So
do they use Zionist almost as the opposite of from the river to the sea? They mean it, you want to wipe out all Palestinians? Is that
no, so what? They think thus that way. There are extreme Zionists who believe in a thing called Greater Israel, where they believe, this is mostly religious Jews who are Zionists who believe like Israel, the West Bank was part of the biblical Israel, you know? I mean, so was part of Jordan, for God's sakes. But yeah, so there is a certain sense of that in like the far right of Israel, for sure. But your average Zionist is like originally was like a secular left wing socialist kibbutz living person. Mm. You know, this was back in the oranges of Israel in the old days. Now they're considered settler. They use the term settler and Zionist to make it like to dehumanize the situation for when there's a terrorist attack. But yeah.
I feel like, so to reveal how little I know about this, I just got a dog a few months ago and he's really big and I wanted to name him Zion because of Zion Williamson. And my dad was like, you probably don't want to do that. And I'm so glad every day that I didn't name my dog Zion. And I didn't know what it meant. I just thought it was this basketball player's name.
Well, how is Adolf doing?
You really buried the lead here. You're a fan of Zion Williamson. Exactly.
My boyfriend is a Duke guy. And I'm like,
New Orleans Pelicans?
Have heard about Zion Williamson's wingspan for more than, but yeah, Adolf and Pol Pot are doing wonderfully. Thank
Did
you.
Did he name yeah. RJ Bob Marley? RJ. Bob Marley always sings all the songs about Zion, Holy Mount Zion.
Yeah, because Zion is from the Bible. It just means like Jerusalem in the old, and that's where it comes from, the land of Zion. But yeah, it's now.
I propose an additional roundtable where Cap just explains all this shit to us because none of us know what's going on.
I propose a Zion Williamson episode.
I need to know this stuff. Yeah.
I think we should do a two-part episode. The first part, we do Zionism, and then the second part, Zion Williamson. There
you go. That sounds great. Can I either offer a question to the group or if listeners want to post to the comments, yes. I'd be up for this. Because most of the people in my life that are involved in this issue are Jewish and not Palestinian. I know maybe three Palestinians, but I know, you know, 40 Jewish people. I feel like I'm getting very one-sided news. Mm. Is there a source that anybody would recommend that you think takes a sympathetic position to Palestine and is a rational, trustable source that I could inform myself on? Like the other day I heard, like, and I don't know if this is true, I heard that people in Gaza don't have passports, that they've been deprived of passports. Mm. They can't even leave if they want to. Well, that's fucked up, right? Like that's a thing where I'm like, okay, that's a bad thing if that's true, but I don't know how to, huh?
But that becomes a complicated question, because it's, you know, Hamas doesn't let people leave, so. And Egypt, won't, there's nowhere to go because Egypt won't take them. But yeah, that is, I don't know, like NPR, would you say? Like what's like a good, like,
I recommend, and you know him, Heaton, from his show, Dino Bidala from the Dino Bidala show on SiriusXM is a Palestinian American, and he's left-leaning politically, and a lot of the time his show is about sort of like the lightest, ridiculous thing that Trump did, but I've been very grateful to be following him and his posts, and they're very thoughtful and I think very clear-headed reporting on what's actually going on. Be aware that there is a political left lean to it all, but he's the person that I'm most following, and I really have respected and appreciated his posts. And it's very, you know, here's what's happening on the ground. He has a lot of interviews with Palestinian and Middle East foreign policy experts who I really have appreciated. So even people he has on his show are worth following as well.
Okay, and I would say the one thing I would say for both sides is you just be careful about what you're following, because it's like there'll be these Palestinian things I'll see that'll go up and it's like some horrible bombing situation. And it's actually a video from Syria a few years ago.
Right.
And nobody cared about the Syrians then, but now they care about it when it's Palestinians. And then
Dean is a journalist. He's a good journalist, I should say.
And I'll just say full disclosure. I shared something the other day about like somebody harassing nannies in the Upper East Side if their kids were Jewish. And it was like a bunch of moms played a game of telephone and freaked out over some fake news, and I thought it was true. So it's very easy to fall for stuff right now. So everybody, that's my disclaimer for everything you're following. Yeah. But But on that note, I think, should we wrap this up?
Let's wrap it.
Yeah. This has been a great conversation. Thank you all. I was going to send my kids to Arizona State. I thought that was a fun school, but I know they've been protesting a little bit of pro Hamas. So I think I'm sending them to University of Miami. That's my announcement to end the show.
Everybody.
So early decision. I'm using Turner as a reference. And
I think we'll be raising a fundraiser to be donors and members of the board of trustees at University of Miami. I think that's where all the Patreon funds are going to go from now on. If I got that right.
Also, I just want to say it's a private school in Florida. So there is news coming out about, in Florida, the governor, DeSantis, is making all these rules. You can't say this. You can't do this. None of them affect the University of Miami. Just
boom.
Private schools.
What is your mascot?
The Hurricanes.
The Hurricanes. We have an Ibis.
Go Hurricanes. Here we go.
Yes. Sebastian the Ibis.
It's triggering. So it's a triggering title, Hurricane, but yeah.
Listen, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. Follow us. We are Lost in America, everybody. Follow. We put those shows out weekly. Follow The Political Orphanage. Listen to The Political Orphanage with Dr. Andrew Heaton. No, Professor Andrew Heaton.
Ambassador. Ambassador Heaton.
Who will not be bought by AIPAC. He wouldn't accept their money. So you should
live from the Royal Scots Club. And Dr. Andrea Jones Roy at the Majoring in Everything podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we'll solve the conflict next time.
Yep.
Tune in next time. Get lost.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.